You're like teaching a monkey to work a cigarette lighter.
I don't know. Something's wrong with my Skype.
Oh, I got a live one here.
Character. My uncle, he's a pathological liar, and he thought you were someone else.
Emojis are retarded.
Yeah. All right, let's do this.
Let's do it.
Hey there, everybody. Is that what you're doing, Love Boat?
Yep.
All right. Hi, this is the Pop-Tarts Spoiler Alert, Ain't It Cool News podcast-ish. As you can tell by the clusterfuck of a start, worse than usual, that's because the two worst are in charge. Who are we? I'm Rob Petey, but still fucking better known as Optimus Douche from Ain't It Cool News.
You're cursed with it for life.
It's like the Herpes C. And who are you?
My name is Herb C.
were you the opening band for Vitamin C back in the 90s?
I was.
It was, Herb C, then Vitamin C?
Then Vitamin C, yes.
And, she was terrible. She was just good to look at. She was a terrible singer, though.
Vitamin C, what did she sing?
I ain't got nobody that I can dip. It was a club whore song. Guys just stood off by the bar with our long hair and our flannels and watched girls shake their ass in their baggy jeans. It was the 90s. It was...
Nice.
Yeah, not good. Who are you really?
My name is Mark_L_Miller.
Specifically on the Twitters.
On the Twitters, I am...
Mark.
That, yeah. Right.
And by who day, else are
they,
you?
By day and at my day job, they call me Ambush Bug.
You're still going to pretend that we actually get paid for this shit,
aren't you? That's who my checks are made out to.
Fucking adorable. It's not real. It's a delusion.
Yes.
You are Ambush Bug on Ain't It Cool News, my boss, my Perry White, if you will.
Yeah, I somehow wrangle the cats and make everything cohesive on Ain't It Cool.
But you whine a lot. That's how.
I do. I bitch at you guys. Give me some reviews.
I know, constantly.
Mm-hmm.
I know, we're terrible. Terrible,
I do it like it's my job.
Like a boss.
Yeah, sort of.
A whiny, pleading boss.
Come on, guys.
Come on.
Give me some reviews.
Clark, Lois, will you go look at the meteorite, please?
Will you guys do that?
Please.
I'm much more stronger on like with stronger willed, and you know, I get my Perry White on every now and then.
Oh no, yeah, you crack the whip. I'm just immune to it now. It's been like a fucking decade. I'm just numb to you.
Yeah, on the podcast, I have another persona.
You're so deep and complex.
I am.
Where's JD this week? JD finally developed good taste. No, JD's just taking a week off. He has more important shit to do than entertain you jackals.
Yeah, so he just let us two monkeys free in the zoo.
I'm fucking believable. And you know what? JD's probably... You know what? Fuck you guys. JD is doing something better right now because we don't get emails. So we did get one this week.
We did.
Okay, we got one. But I'll get into it. Let me read the email first.
Okay, wait.
Emails that come in right at your ears.
Shimmeroo.
Why are we going to Mary Poppins?
I don't know. I was just
You fucking, wow. It's because JD's not here. It's not as much fun without him. It's not as much fun without him screaming at us, though. You know?
Yeah.
That's really what makes it. Fuck.
So once again, we have to warn people. There will be a lot of ums, a lot of uncomfortable pauses, many swears.
No structure.
A lot of inappropriate shit.
This
podcast.
I don't know that we shit the bed on the whole song thing because he's not here. Maybe we'll actually be politically correct and on point.
That'd be great if the one podcast that he's not on, we're totally politically correct.
It was the one podcast he would have wanted.
Yep.
Well, he's not dead. I don't know what the fuck we're talking about like he's dead.
Yeah, well, he's here. And he's here in spirit.
But he's here under my desk, too.
Yeah. He's duct, under your desk?
Duct tape. Yeah. I confused him for a child because he's so small and his voice is so high. So he said, "Hey, I really could use a couple extra kids in the van today." I said, "All right, let me go do that for you." He turned around and I thought he was a child and I clubbed him over the head and I put him in the van.
That's the main reason how he gets them in the van is they think they're one of him. He's one.
Oh, sure, yeah. He just goes up in his short pants and licking a giant sized lollipop. Hey, guys!
He's got a hat with a propeller on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome.
Do you guys think Miles Morales is the best Spider-Man, too?
Yeah. Here, I got an awesome picture of him in my van.
It's on my van.
Stuck up with some adhesive on the ceiling. So we got an email?
We did. We won't get any more after this. But
let's hear it.
All right. Dear Tards, I am a fan and am writing to see that if when you say you don't get any emails, you mean you don't get any good emails. I guess the response / lack of response will provide that answer. We're reading it because it's a fucking email.
Yeah, well, we usually, if we get an email, we'll read it. If we don't get any emails, then we can't read those because they don't exist.
So the fact that we're reading an email about our emails is pretty indicative of the fact we're really fucking hard up for emails.
We'll read anything. And also, that one week that I wasn't here when those guys were just sending in nonsense, I loved it, and I want more nonsense, but you guys didn't like the nonsense. But if we just got nonsense in the mail, we will read it because we read it that week.
There was nothing to read. It was a backward talking midget from Twin Peaks.
Yes, that was awesome.
All right. Wait, this one goes on. There's more.
Oh, there's more.
Your podcast is more anticipated than any TV show currently on my watch list. And I see
Antique Roadshow?
I believe we are better than Murder, She Wrote.
I always wondered, how long can that series go on? I mean, there's not that many antique roads around.
You know that the, you're right. You know what? You're right. They're running out of cobblestone. I think this is last season.
Okay, good.
Yeah, they've run out of cobblestone streets. They're all on asphalt now. It's just, it's not the same anymore.
Is there more? Email?
Sure. No, that's all right. We'll go back to that. Let's rewind. Your podcast is more anticipated than any TV show currently on my watch list. Again, we question the depth and breadth of his watch list. And I seem to enjoy listening to you spew about comics, from your critiques to the pure verbal golden diarrhea that engrosses me so.
This was so far, even up to this point, this is an overflowing toilet bowl of verbal diarrhea.
It is, but it's gushing, it's diarrheaing all over us.
It is, that's true.
So that's like we were talking about, what was it, a couple weeks ago, where JD said he puts a saran wrap over his face to feel the slideys go down, and I recommend a glass table. It's much less messy.
Yeah, still, I think you know too much about that.
Well, you know, I read. All right, so I'm the comics, JD's the critiques, your verbal diarrhea.
Okay.
Yeah. I love comics, and even more, discussing and making this solitary hobby into a social community since the internet. Yeah, the internet is fucking baller for that. Nobody shares us, though. That's why we're reading an email about the emails we get.
Yep.
Yeah, so you guys love us, fucking share us. We'll talk about anything pop culture-y. Anything.
True.
Almost. Anime, we're probably fucked.
All right.
But, you know, video games, movies, TV, breadth and depth, we are wide. So, but you have to share us for us to broaden. Right now, you guys just want to hear about comics. So, it's partially your fault. Keep it up. Sometimes I've laughed so hard I almost fell off the Stairmaster at the gym. This happens often, usually when there's passing mention of JD's windowless van. Oh. Fuck, we killed him already. We just talked about the van for 5 minutes. Fuck!
We already lost a listener.
God damn it, this is one of our best ones.
Yes.
And the name is Roberto Luna.
C.
It's actually Robert, but wanted to hear Bugs say...
Z.
That was anticlimactic. Shit. Oh, man.
It's not as good when JD, when we're not here to piss off JD.
I know. I was like, is that being racist? But again, yeah. It's not racist. You are speaking their native tongue. We just have problems with our translation software.
I don't mean it as a racial slant.
Not at all.
I am just agreeing with you.
Correct.
And I live in a Latino burg, Latina burg of Chicago.
Right, let me say a name to you.
And I have enjoyed the company of many Latina women.
And when you greet them, what do you say?
Hola.
Let's do this. Let's do Bug on a Tinder date with a Latino woman.
Is it, ¿dónde está la biblioteca?
Oye, mi papi.
I don't know. I don't know what I say. I just say, hey. I raise an eyebrow.
I was wondering if you screamed C right in their face and if it worked.
No, not at first.
Saves that for the orgasm. C?
No. C.
Bueno.
Bueno, bugo. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Robert Luna.
Yes. That was very nice.
That was very nice.
I'm glad that we endanger him on a weekly basis on the treadmill.
Yeah. And again, really, I don't know, basic cable?
We might be basic cable, maybe.
No. I mean, I'm just wondering just what his cable package is, because if we're top of the watch list. So we're not top on my watch list. There's like 42 other things I do before I listen to this shit.
I often do listen to, I listen to this podcast, and then I've started listening to a podcast called It's Always Friday the 13th, which is basically, it dissects every Friday the 13th movie one at a time. It's really interesting. I just love it. But I've listened to almost all the episodes. They're up to Freddy versus Jason, but before they're doing Freddy versus Jason, they're looking at Nightmare on Elm Street, which, coincidentally, plug.
For fuck's sake, he's not even here. He's not even.
We are going to be looking at It Follows and Nightmare on Elm Street in our next Cannibal Horror Cast.
Oh my God, I've got the edit button tonight. I'm editing.
Don't you dare
edit. I'm fucking editing. Yeah, God, no, all right, yeah. And I'm sorry, the Cannibal Horror Cast runs when, Bug?
Usually like Thursdays or something, but we're a little behind, so I don't know when it's going to be happening. But it'll be happening sometime soon.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So just
say fucking more.
Hold your breaths and sit on the edge of your seats until we drop it. I'm not sure when it's going to happen, though. We haven't recorded it yet. But we've seen all the movies.
Wow.
I guarantee it'll be good. Well, I can't guarantee that, but
no,
I guarantee it'll be done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Can you guarantee it'll be?
I guarantee it will be. Yes, that's it.
That's cool. All right, so there's that other fucking thing. Okay.
We had a Facebook thing?
Oh, yeah. Shit. Yeah, this is really hard. We had a couple questions on Facebook tonight.
Did we?
Yeah, so Dan Day wants to hear... You don't look. Don't act surprised. You don't look.
I don't look at Facebook, usually.
Well, that's where people are interacting with us. Maybe we'd have more listeners and more fucking emails on the Pop-Tards.
Just got a couple of friend requests again.
Oh, God's sake. Was one of them Tom from MySpace? It's been a while.
There's a Tom in there.
Been a while since you logged in. Yeah. All right. Now, Dan Day would like to hear my thoughts on Vacation movie, if you saw it. No, I didn't, Dan, and instead I posted the picture about three down where I am drunk with my friends instead, we united our middle-aged asses to form Ultron and went out and hit Philadelphia.
Nice. Who did Ultron fight?
Ultron fought everything from hipster douchebags to our own feeling that if we weren't such repressed man children, the people in the bar possibly could be our children.
Ah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. It's always a good feeling. It's always a good feeling. Happy 41.
Happy birthday, by the way. Did you get my birthday song?
Oh, yes. The mariachi band?
Yeah.
Mariachi birthday? Yeah.
Felt it would be fitting.
You know, and I watched the whole thing because when we were down in Mexico, I'd throw chips at their head to get them to go away. Carly said it's not like I'm at the Jersey Shore like the seagulls. Like, if you throw fries at the seagulls, they'll fucking go after them.
Yeah.
So I threw chips, and that didn't work. So I tipped a dollar, and they'd walk away. They're really fucking annoying. You're trying to eat, and it's like, you know, they got a frigging guitar in your ear, you know?
Yeah.
Culture. Okay, Dan also wants to hear about the Fantastic Four movie. Not yet. We'll do that in a little bit.
At the very end.
Matt Adler asks...
Yes?
Do you miss my crazy ass?
I always miss his crazy ass.
I do, too.
I like watching it sway to and fro.
It's like it was like a swizzle straw. It was crazy ass. It wouldn't just shit out. It would go in a up-down loop-de-loop configuration. It's crazy. Yeah.
It required a straitjacket occasionally.
Of course we miss you. We don't have any facts.
Yes, we are running on fact-free.
We wing it, and, you know, we've got vague whispers of memory, Matt, that we just... You biblioteca.
Donde esta?
My Adler is biblioteca.
Yes. But, yeah.
Wow, that's beautiful. You should write for Hallmark.
Did you see Fantastic Four?
All right, we're going to roll right into that next. Fuck it. Yeah, it's our podcast. No, I didn't, because I said I wouldn't. Even if I went to the movies this weekend, instead of getting drunk with my friends and forming Ultron, I would not have gone to see this. It's a video for me. Sorry.
I saw it today.
Well, you are a masochist.
So we will talk about it later.
Well, let's do it now. We're here.
Do we want to talk about it now, first off?
Yeah, it saves me on editing.
Okay. So today I saw Fantastic Four...
Dude. Wow.
I don't know if anybody's known about this, but it's a movie that's coming out, and I've heard a lot of positive buzz about it.
Have you? So have I. You know, and it's like all the past Fantastic Four movies. I mean, they just keep hitting home runs with them.
I know. Yeah. You know, it's great because they keep on making them, making them with different casts and everything. Mm-hmm. Personally, I think the Roger Corman one way back in the day.
Is that the one that where the guy, like, Johnny Storm made his hair blonde and the guy had, like, permanent scalp damage? His hair fell out? Yeah.
Yeah. That one was probably my favorite. But this one, yeah. This movie.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the internet rumors that went around talking about this and that were not true.
Okay, so I heard the rumor that people would rather... eat their own grandmother's asshole than watch Fantastic Four. Is that true or not true?
Well, I don't know. I would not. I'm not into eating assholes. That's just not my thing. But
what about Sophia Loren? She's a grandma with a great asshole.
I don't think so.
Yes, you would. If she said,
I'm just not into that. That just doesn't.
If you were
eat my loaf.
If you were at a con and Sophia Loren said, "Lick my asshole," you would.
I don't know.
Just to say you did. Yes, you would.
I don't know.
Fine.
All right. I'm saying is, it wasn't. Here's the thing. I read a couple of reviews on it. I've kind of tried to go in with like an open mind and everything. I do think that it is a very problematic movie. I think that. It really is one of those movies where if this were just a movie with characters that did not have a long, rich history, maybe it would be interesting. But I do feel like none of the characters really acted like the characters that you and I grew up with. I don't think any of the characters acted like Millar's Ultimate Fantastic Four, but I don't know. I didn't really read that, but...
They weren't. Here's the main thing I heard. Like, So, for anybody who saw the last movie, they no longer go up in space. It's no longer Jessica Alba and all those. They're far more euthanized now. They're like, they're high school students, which is in line with the Millar Ultimate book. They do not go in space. They find an nth zone, the other dimension.
It's Zero World. And, yeah.
Oh, they, really?
They called it the Zero World.
Oh.
Or Earth Zero.
No, can't do that.
Or they called it something like that. But it was Earth, I think it is, they did call it Earth Zero. But they did not call it the Negative Zone. They did not even really... All right, let me start from the beginning. All right, it is the problem with the whole thing, really, is just the fact that none of the characters were really likable. None of the characters interacted with each other as if they liked each other. Mm. Even the characters who were supposed to be kind of, Johnny Storm was always the one that was like happy with his powers. And in this one, it's just Johnny Storm is, he's angry. He's like an angry young guy that's just trying to rebel against his father, who always like kind of wanted him to be a scientist, and he had the brains and he had the smarts to do it, be a scientist, but he never wanted to. He just wanted to be a thrill seeker and everything. And he has like one little car chase scene that was ripped out of like the reject reel of a Fast and Furious movie. And then he is enlisted into this team of scientists who are trying to crack the code into another world. So it's not the problem about the fact that he's a black guy. It's the problem about the fact that he is just, he's not fun. And Johnny Storm is supposed to be the fun character of the group. Mm-hmm. He's the jocular one. I think if any of the first two movies did a good job, Chris Evans did a fantastic job with Human Torch.
Yeah.
And I think they should have used that as the template. Unfortunately, and this is the case across the board, I think, that... it seems like the old, like the movies of the 90s and the early 2000s, specifically the Marvel movies, but also I think they could be counted as the Batman movies. It was always like Christopher Nolan's Batman. It was like Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. It was like all of these big names mm-hmm. trying to put their stamp on it and put their twist on it. This read like Josh Trank's Fantastic Four, unlike just the Marvel movies, which was Ant-Man. It wasn't like they were trying to say it was Peyton Reed's Ant-Man. It was just Ant-Man. And they let the source material be the source material.
Well, they are creating a comic book movie series at Marvel Studios. I mean, that's the Avengers 2 taught us anything, love it, hate it, indifferent to it, whatever. It taught us that they are truly trying to give the movie going audience the serial comic experience that built upon itself that we've all loved for years. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to do that at the other studios. Christopher Nolan's Batman, yes, it was a thing unto itself. I mean, the closest we're going to have is Man of Steel and Dawn of Justice coming next year.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we need to see how that goes. That's DC taking the stamp away, taking the artistry away, and saying, now we're going to create our comic book movie series.
Yeah. And it's like a team approach. And it just feels like, I mean, that this was basically Josh Trank saying, like, okay, well, this is the way it was in the comic books, but, you know, I'm going to try to change it. You know, going into space is just too dumb. Let's just have them go into another dimension. And then when they're at the other dimension, I mean, I'm not even going to get into Doom yet, but I mean, it's like just the whole motivation between all of them getting together. It just feels very feels very unnatural. It feels like just the storyteller saying these guys have to come together. So we're just going to smoosh them together and have them. The motivation was the story. It wasn't the character's motivation that formed the story. You know what I mean?
I didn't see the movie, but I understand what you mean. And that's a problem that a lot of people had with the Ultimate Universe of it, is that they were just kind of thrown together because they were smart little whiz kids. Yeah. Something we had seen really 1,000 times before in like every fucking 80s movie. Yeah. But they did give these kids a wee bit more soul. And I never had a problem with Johnny Storm being black. I had a problem with Kate Mara being white.
Yeah.
It's just overly convoluted. What the fuck? Well, Why do you need that?
One of the things, it's not even any of the black-white thing. It's like that they've established that this Franklin Baxter, Franklin Storm, is basically, he's a collector of these kind of like lost geniuses. And so he has one kid who's a pretty smart kid in Johnny Storm. He adopted Kate Mara apparently from Kosovo. Okay. He adopted her from Kosovo. For some reason, they gave her a Kosovo background or something like that. He's adopted Victor Von Doom, who's this rebellious guy in his own really dark lab who sits back and just really doesn't want to take orders from anybody and has this crush on Sue Storm. And finally, he adopts Reed Richards because he's the one that's kind of cracked the code and has done what Victor Von Doom hasn't been able to do.
All right, so that's cool. So he's like a genius, like child slave runner.
He's like a genius.
All right, okay.
He's like Professor X, basically. They made him like Professor X, where he's gathered these brainiacs to all get together and try to. There's no reason why Franklin Storm is trying to do this, other than the fact that he's got like four kids who are kind of like intent on doing it. So there's another hole. The other hole is that just like in the case of Victor Von Doom, he shows up. He's in there for a while. He's kind of a compelling character. They do amp up this jealousy and this kind of like crush he has on Sue Storm, but it's never really it never really goes anywhere because Sue Storm never pushes him away. But she never accepts any of it either. It's almost as if like she moves around like he's not even there. And it's really like any flirtation between Reed and Sue is just, I mean, they have one tiny moment in there between them. And that's about it. There's no relationship here. There's no like even indication that there's going to be any type of relationship between the two, other than there's like maybe 2 minutes dedicated to some flirtation between the two of them.
Man, there seems to be a request for a castration of that from younger audiences. It seems like it's almost hated at this point. There's a reviling of adding in a relationship, so that's fine. I mean, I've always
any type of relationship. Yeah, any type of heterosexual relationship almost sometimes because it does feel like there's an amped up of homosexual relationships in comics that I'm seeing lately. But any type of like just man-woman kind of relationships, you don't see that too often.
Well, and there's always a balancing of scales. I mean, there's always, look at our mother's shoulders in the 80s, okay? For women to be respected just walking into the business world, they had to have big fucking shoulders so the monkey men across the table would give them at least some of that visual respect that we immediately give when we walk up and we meet somebody. So we always go to hyperbole, and now, you know, ladies' shoulders are smaller again, thank God, and, you know, there's more quality without having to have those extra visual cues. What we're seeing right now, I think, is just that explosion of saying, hey, the world has changed. We need to get the message out there to places that don't get the messages quickly, you know, via Pony Express.
I mean,
so that's fine. But this one is one that's always been kind of embedded. And here's where I say it sucks. I don't think it matters because I don't think they're going to do another movie. But if they did do another movie and then they tried to initiate the relationship when they gave no commitment to it the first one, then I would have a problem with it.
Well, yeah, I doubt there'll be a second movie, honestly. Well, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But I guess one of the things that really does bother me is just the fact that Ben and Johnny don't have any interaction with each other. Mm-hmm. Johnny and Reed have a little bit of reaction to one another because he's the only one that doesn't have any prejudgments against Johnny Storm for being like a hothead and being a rebel. So it's like they've got some type of bond. There is a little bit of Ben and Reed in there, but if they were growing up best friends as long as they could, the struggle between the two of them, it just doesn't feel real. Plus, like, there's a point in the movie where Reed he escapes the facility that all four of them come back, and basically all of them are exhibiting these powers. Reed is able to squeeze through the vents and escape, but then he is brought back and like a year later, and it feels like just an unnecessary 15 minutes of storytelling with just like them being away. It just doesn't feel like it was necessary to have this happen. I mean, yes, it formed like resentments among the four of them because it felt like Reed left them, but Reed was always working on trying to fix things while he was gone, without like under the nose of the company that is like supervising them. But it just doesn't feel, it just felt like wasted space. Finally, it's like, after Doom gets lost in the initial mission, so it's like the four of them go over there. Sue doesn't even go over there. And really, it's like I felt like they did a lot of rewrites to her character to try to make her more relevant to this story. At the beginning, it's like Reed is asking her what her part of the mission is. And she says she's designing the suits. She designs the spacesuits over there. Also, for no real apparent reason other than to have it come up later on in the movie, she recognizes patterns. And there's this whole thing about music, and she recognizes patterns and everything. And it's like, I don't know. I guess it's supposed to be her attunement to things that people usually don't see. But it seems almost too vague to have her power like that.
They messed with all the powers. They tried to give them more of a scientific basis. So
they did.
That was one of the things where people got asked up about, saying this is some pretty campy shit you just got to buy into after a while.
And they cut all that out of the movie. They did not say Reed is warping space and time. They did not say that that Sue is vibrating her molecules. They just basically said that she's making herself invisible. And visible, again, she was fluctuating there when she first got through. They didn't even explain Reed's powers. He just has stretchy powers. Johnny, the only thing close to them sort of explaining why they got their different powers is the fact that Johnny's cockpit thing, when he went over, it burst into flames, and so when he came back over, he was on fire. Ben Grimm's door opened up while they were transferring out of there, and a bunch of rocks flew in there with him and everything, and so he came out, he was just like covered in giant boulders.
So he got crushed like a Salem warlock.
No, yeah, well, I guess, like, yeah, the rock storm that was going on out there got in there, and now he was trained. And then, and so when Reed comes back, he's all stretchy. So, anyway, all this other stuff happens. Everyone's angsty. Everyone's, like, serious. Everyone's, like, there's no real connection between any of the four of these guys because they want Ben and Johnny to be weapons for the military. They want Sue to eventually be a new weapon for them, but they know it's going to take her a while to cross over and be okay with being a weapon. And there's like a scene where she screams, "I am not a tool." And I'm like, you know, you all are a bunch of tools. But but all during all this time, Doom is nowhere to be seen. So all of a sudden they go back on a second mission. They send in some military over there, and Doom comes back walking out of the primordial ooze of the negative zone and just destroys all of the guys and comes back he comes back, collapses. They bring him back just to kind of show him off to everyone else. And he looks like a melted baboon. Basically, his protective suit has melded to his body. His face is Doom-like, although it's like skin tight and it looks horrible. And there's just no there.
So Doom. Wait,
I don't
so,
know
so,
why.
Wait a minute. So Doom is wearing skinny armor.
Basically, it's the armor was melted to his flesh, so he's walking around naked. He's got somewhere along in the negative zone, they found a cloak store, and he's got like a hooded cloak that he wears. But he is basically just a melted, shambling mess of the costume that he had. Now, I mean, this can be said that this is Doom version 0.1 and that he'll get the armor in the next one or whatever, but there's no guarantee there will be a next one.
No, there won't be. 7 years.
There's also no explanation of Doom's power at all. I mean, he somehow has telekinetic power. He explodes the heads of people. He gives people, like, radioactive poisoning. He floats, he does land bridges, he creates black holes. There's like his power is like limitless. And just the way they do, I was told that the Fantastic Four Voltron it up, where they all combine together into one being to fight Doom, but they don't do that. They do combine their powers a little bit. Still, they do nothing that really that they didn't try before against Doom, but just because the movie has to end, it works this time.
Wait. You know what else has to end? This review, because my head's about to explode. This is terrible. So, yes, terrible. Wrap up, please.
All right, I'm wrapping it up. It's just that there's no soul. There's no fun. There's no even the witty banter. I mean, the writing. The problem is right at the script stage. At the very end, they're like trying to find a. They said, "Well, we're four. There's four of us. We have to have a team name." And they look over, and the other thing is they are sent to this, I don't know, jungle habitat, which is a giant research facility, because they need a lot of room to do their experiments. And Doom and Thing says, "It's fantastic." And Reed goes, "Oh, I like that. What did you just say? Can you repeat that?" And the Thing says, "It's fantastic." And he says, "I know. I know a name for us."
It's fantastic.
And then
you
Fantastic
jump,
Four comes across the screen.
The electric slide.
That's electric.
Yeah, but there's one line where they go, "It's like fantastic and electric." Oh. I know. You know what? You should just lit yourself on fire and throw yourself through the movie screen.
Well, here's the thing, and it's like Josh Trank has posted on Twitter, and it got taken down, saying like that this is not the movie that he tried to make, and maybe that's the case. But it really, it's like this is just from start to finish. It's even if it wasn't the movie that he tried to make, the fact is that he saw the script, he could have seen the bad dialogue, the lack of a soul, the lack of any human interaction between any of these characters, and just the lack of real, like, it didn't have just the popcorn fun that you see in an Ant-Man, that you see in any of the other movies. Even, like, I'm not a big fan of the Thor movies, but even those are fun. And this is everything, from everything to a cast that isn't fun, to a script that really isn't clever at all or doesn't have any type of punch to it. No cameo by Stan Lee. No teaser after the credits or anything like that. It's almost like they tried to do everything they possibly could to make something more on par with the Elektra and Daredevil stuff than any of the stuff that we've had like right now.
And this is a license grab at this point. These are people being greedy, trying to get more money out of the IP to keep it away from Disney or get more money out of Disney once they come a courting again. They shit the bed on this one. So, you know what? Sell, sell, sell.
Yeah, and I heard it was projected to make $40 million this weekend. It only made 28. And that was a low projection for the film. So, I mean, there's no way that there are. And the thing is, with Miles Teller and Kate Mara on the rise, and what's his name, Michael Jordan, is that his name?
Sure.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan. With all their stars on the rise, there's no. That's basically their fees as actors all together, you know, and that's even before they do any type of like 28 million is not going to be something that's going to pay everybody back or actually make any money in order to justify another sequel. So thankfully, I mean, a lot of the negative buzz was just a lot of bullshit that you read on the internet. But the stuff that you got, it wasn't much better. There were like a couple of moments that I kind of liked. I do think that some of the interactions with Reed and Johnny were good. Some of the stuff with Ben, but I think Jamie Bell was really miscast as the Thing. They need somebody with a recognizable voice. Jamie Bell is just, I mean, he may be a great actor, but he's just not recognizable, and he really didn't bring that toughness to the character that you needed. You almost needed a toughness like that River Phoenix brought to that character. Who was the tough kid in explorers. River Phoenix wasn't the tough kid in
this. You promised me you were ending this.
I am, but I'm just saying.
It was Ethan Hawke. Not Ethan Hawke. Dead Poets Society.
No, Ethan Hawke and River Phoenix, and there was another kid in Explorers, and one of them was a tough kid.
That was River Phoenix.
He was a tough kid? Okay.
Well, he's a tough kid in Stand By Me.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean he's Ethan Hawke. Yeah, well, anyway, they just tried to make it young. I think the only thing that they can do is if Marvel gets a hold of it, they should just try to have it be older, have it these guys be lost in space all this time, and they come back and are brought back as, like, middle-aged people. I mean, I think that the family aspect is just not there, and it needs to be a family movie. I mean, have them be the Space Family Robinson and do it that way. It's just ridiculous that that nobody can get this property right, and it's so easy to do.
Well, but you know what, Bug? When it started, they were middle-aged. I mean, this is when the characters actually aged over time. So I'd say, if you're going to do the movie, shoot four fuckers up into space and have them get their dicks caught in a solar flare.
Well, I just think, yeah, that could be one of them. I think that...
Like it happened in the comic.
They keep on missing the boat with Doom, too, and I think that it's so easy. It's like, make it an arms race. Make it like both of them have discovered this kind of, like, tear in the universe, and both Latveria and the U.S. are fighting to get there, and so there's already a rivalry between Doom and Reed. You know, make it something that's understandable. Don't make Doom a goth kid sitting in a dark room. And just, you know, I think that it's like we're sitting here spitballing, like, ideas and stuff. Uh-huh. And it's better than anything that any of these so-called, like, Hollywood writers are able to come up with.
And there was a definitive demographic grab. Let's be honest. And you and I are not throwing any fucking teenagers in there. We're putting in adults with responsibilities and all sorts of other shit because we're adults with responsibilities. Yeah. I don't have a problem with a teenage group. I say go create a new fucking teenage group. And the Fantastic Four is a 60s contrivance. Unless you completely reiterate that 60s contrivance, either something from it is lost or you end up with something that is just kind of stupid that you try to over-explain. They've done it now a bunch of times. So come up with something new.
Yeah, I mean, I think that maybe have it be a period piece like Captain America the First Avenger was and do it that way. I don't
30 know. Seconds. 30 fucking seconds. And I'm cutting this at 45 minutes.
All right. All I'm saying is the stuff that a lot of people were complaining about, the race stuff, the stuff with Michael B. Jordan, that was the least annoying part of the movie. It doesn't have anything to do with the reason why I don't like it doesn't have anything to do with Michael B. Jordan, doesn't have anything to do with any of that shit. It's just
And you are done. You are not a racist. Fine.
No soul, no fun.
Damn it.
Period.
Okay, speaking of no soul, no fun. Do you feel that way about Dark Quarter number one by Rich Tomasso, not Pete Tomasi, Rich Tomasso.
No, but there is a racist dog in this book.
There is. My Yorkie was racist growing up.
I was going to ask you about your dog. Is your dog racist? Because dogs are racist.
No, Fergus is an enormous pussy. He's just a big, huge marshmallow. He's like his father. He's just big, dumb, blonde, and looking for love constantly. My dog growing up, though, Woody, because he was small, like little men, had a complex to fuck with everything to prove his dominance. So really, really hated Jewish people. We can never figure that one out because all my friends were Jewish. It was just, I don't know. He could always tell. Yeah, Star David or something on the neck. I don't know. Versus a cross. I don't know. But Woody's big thing was Jewish people and Indians.
I have a theory about that.
What?
That dogs, like, you know, dogs are very, dogs are kind of like sheltered children a lot of times. They are in your backyard, they are in your neighborhood, and you walk around the neighborhood. They don't get out much. They're in your home, and that's it. And if you're a white person and you're around white people, like, in your home, and a dog doesn't see a person of a darker color,
right,
then it's going to be alarmed. It just doesn't see that. It's just like if you have a kid, they're going to notice the differences. If you had like a black kid who is in the home all the time, if they're around black people all the time, if the only white people they see is on television and everything like that, when they see a white person, they're going to have questions.
It doesn't work that way.
No. I think it's not really racist. It's just the fact that it's different. There's somebody different. It looks different than the normal amount of people that they normally see.
There is a different sensory input. Agreed. My dog was a fucking asshole. There are some that are just aggressors. You look at them in the eyes, and they either have love and adoration and sweetness, like Fergus, or like Woody, they want to fucking eat your soul. Nobody can look at Woody for very long. Really, the amount of time you could look at Woody before he snapped and tried to rip off your eyebrows or part of your face, because he only had a little mouth. I mean, the best he could do is like give you like a nose piercing if he latched on. If Fergus, stop. If he did that, then you were his owner if he like let you look at him for a minute before he fucking engaged and enacted. But this dog wasn't like that in the comic book. This dog,
he barked at the black guys.
He did. He did, but he had a sweetness to him towards the Italian man who found him on the patio. Say what this is about Beyond the Rhesus Dog.
Okay, so this guy is sitting there. He's mixing a drink in his apartment building. And as he's doing that, he looks out out his door. There's a dog out there scratching, and the dog's covered in blood. And so this guy turns out to be a hitman. And so he goes and what does he do? Does he check? How does he find the place?
I didn't really love this. I read it because you asked me to, so I really skim read it. So I'm not going to provide any plot. spackle for you.
So he takes the dog. He washes it off. Washes all the blood off. He thinks it's a dog that has been in a dog fight, and he's mad. He says he's going to have to kill him.
That's why he goes down to the hood. And he goes down to the hood. Black friend, right?
It's his black friend. Yeah. Asks him, "Hey, do you know? I'm looking for the owner of this dog. Do you know anything about that?" And then they look at it, and the dog barks at the black guy. And, like, all these guys around the street are like, "Motherfucker, racist-ass dog." And they're like, "Get that fucking racist-ass dog out of here." And they're, like, saying shit like that. It's pretty funny. But and so he finally leaves, and somehow he ends up – oh, he lets the dog loose, or the dog jumps out of his car. The dog leads him back to a murder scene. There are two people there, murdered on the floor with knives. He thinks it's a domestic dispute. And so immediately he gets on the phone, and you think he's calling 911. Instead, he calls his friend, who used to be a security guard, and says, "Hey, I got this like kind of well-to-do place. There are these two dead people here. Come on over here." And so him and this other guy come over here. So these three guys, they're looting this apartment now because there are dead bodies there, and they're just going to get the loot from the apartment.
Yep.
Which is kind of cool. I liked it that it played with the expectations there. And it's like there are these dead bodies over there, and these guys are going through all their stuff, and they're getting all their jewelry and their guns and everything, and they're taking it and divvying it up amongst themselves. I thought that was a nice twist on a regular story that you would probably see. It's a noir kind of twist.
It felt too presentational to me. I don't know. It felt too much talking about who these people were.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't take a, you know, you only need one gun. You're a stick-up guy. You only,
yeah.
I for a noir, I guess, it's fine. It's too hokey for me outside of that. And the art did not lend itself to noir. The art was very R-crumb.
You're right.
Very flat, too. I mean, there was no, you know, that scene in particular is maybe what made me think of it. I mean, you're looking at that table, you're looking at these items. It's all just on one plane.
I agree. I would have to agree on that. I do think that the art has some difficulties there. It reminds me a little bit of Tim Sale, the stuff that we used to see with like Gotham, or the stuff he did with Jeff Loeb, and you know all the color series that they did with Marvel, and then the Long Halloween stuff that they did. It reminds me of that, but a little bit less tight, a little bit scratchier and everything. But then there's another twist at the end, and like they leave, one of the guys spots some bite marks on one of the corpses. And so there's this really sad scene where they lock the dog in the place, and he's whining at the door, and he's trying to go out with them, and they were like, no, we can't take the dog, because then they'll be able to track down the dog to you. You just can't do that. And the guy's like really pining over taking the dog, but he can't. So I thought that kind of hit me there.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
What?
Sorry about that. It didn't come through good. What? I just got a pop-up ad. I just couldn't get that into it emotionally to care that much about the dog at the end.
Well, and then at the end, like, this lady shows up, and she's like a ninja or something. The dog sees her and immediately gets a boner. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
There's a dog boner in this.
Hey, I've got a dog boner on my foot right now.
Does that happen when the dog sees somebody that he hasn't seen in a while?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Sure. It's kind of like us.
Oh.
Yeah. We get boners real quickly on things that don't make a lot of sense. Dogs, yeah. When they get happy, yep, they get very bonery.
Yep. There's a boner right now. Anyway. So that was that. That was the first story. The second story, I didn't really get into that much. It was called Seven Deadly Daughters, Seven Deadly Daughters. Seven Dead Daughters. And,
Fergus.
Wow.
God damn that.
What the hell is going on over there?
He's got a clown. Hold on. Just give me one second. Okay. Come here. Oh, it's his busy bee. Never mind. Okay. So the second story, Bug, why don't you tell us about that?
What did you think about it?
Okay, I didn't give a shit about the main story, so the second story had less impact for me.
The guy gets shot in the face.
Yep.
And his hand gets gnawed off.
Yeah. It would have been cool if it happened before the first story, then we wouldn't have had the first story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think it was okay. I think it had an indie noir kind of feel to it. I'm not, I don't know if I would want to read another issue of this, but if you like indie noir stuff, it reminded me a little bit of Criminal in some aspects.
No.
Well, it didn't.
No, it wasn't as deep. All right. No, okay. Well, fine. All right. If you like Criminal, then you'll like Dark Corridor, maybe.
I don't know if you'd like that, but it's of the same noirish kind of story, and I didn't hate it as much as you did.
Correct. Okay, so that's good. That's a good place to leave that on. Yes, God. Oh, good. Let's... fuck. Batmite, number 3.
Oh, God.
And it's a shame, because it's Dan Jurgens and Corin Howell. And, again, I just cannot muster give a fucks about this. Out of all the new DC books, I mean, they've got things that will hit another one that's really great soon. But, like, Martian Manhunter, even Cyborg, who I haven't given a crap up until now, they have made his story impactful, like we covered last week. Batmite, I don't
think anyone was clamoring for a Batmite story. And I don't think... Even if they were, I don't think this is the story that they were clamoring for. It just doesn't feel... I mean, I guess if you're looking for... If you think Section 8 is entertaining, maybe you'll like this.
I see Section 8, I see as even just more pure lunacy, that where this is slapstick DC. It's up there with Bizarro for me. I mean, has his own title, and I fucking cannot stand Bizarro.
I can't stand Bizarro, I can't stand this, and I can't stand Section 8. They're three cartoony books that will not be around in by the time it gets to the 10th issue. I mean, that's going to be kind.
I see Section 8 at least striving to be somewhat intelligent in its zaniness.
I think Section 8 is only an 8-issue series, though, so that might not get there on a purpose. But there's no way Batmite is going to... I mean, this is just not fun. It's not clever. The ending annoyed the shit out of me because they tried to make it into like a killing joke sort of ending.
Yeah.
And that was just... a mess. why would someone laugh so hard at someone blowing a trumpet in someone's face?
Because there was a point in time when people were very dumb, and we set the precedent that pain was humor, and we laughed at the pain of others, no matter how ridiculously contrived the circumstance that induced the pain.
Yeah, well,
that's why it's...
It doesn't help that the, I don't know. It just, the art, it works for Batmite, but when the artist tries to make realistic people, it's just not working.
Yeah, I mean, this is what? This is Tim Drake here, right?
Yeah, no, this is Damien.
This is Damien, yeah. I'm sorry. It looks so much like Tim Drake's fucking outfit. I thought it was.
Does look like Tim Drake, yeah.
And it looks, and it's way older than Damien. Damien is still a 10-year-old child. This is like, yeah. I know Tim Drake is supposedly older now, but yeah, this guy looks like about 14 or 15.
Yeah, it does not look like a 10-year-old that or 11-year-old that that Damien is supposed to be. Yeah, this is just it's just a weird tone. It would be fun if the characters acted sort of in character. There's a cartoonish version to the way this Robin is portrayed, and it's not like he's not. I mean, there's a moment in there, and there's a, and he's definitely overly serious and wanting to be Batman, but there's just an edge to it that is not there. That I think that it's been prevalent through this whole series. I read the first issue and then this one, and neither one of them really got to me.
Humor
didn't work.
There's no plot, really.
No plot, other than like there's this guy named Gridlock who freezes people. So Batmite sees Robin captured by this Gridlock character, which is ridiculous. But it happens, and so Batmite teleports there, even though he doesn't even know. There's some explanation that he knows exactly where Robin is at all times, so he can teleport to him at any time. And I don't know how that works.
And Booster Gold shows up at the end.
Yeah, so Booster Gold's going to be with him next month.
It really pisses me off. That's what happened to Booster Gold.
It's a pretty shitty book if you have to bring in a new character every issue in order to kind of like tell your story.
You don't even know what the story is.
You don't even have a character. You have someone that just reacts to Booster Gold and makes fun of Booster Gold. This is just like when Batman showed up in Section 8 in the first issue. It's like they're acting out a character. They're there for the main characters to make fun of that character. And it's just not fun. That's not entertaining to me.
And again, we keep putting on Section 8. I give Section 8 a little more credit for trying to just be a little... I don't want to say erudite, because then, you know, that's not the right word, because it's not what this is, but just trying to live on a higher plane. This is stupid slapstick on the page that makes no sense.
Yeah. And of course Booster Gold has to show up, because that's Dan Jurgens' like babe.
That's fine, but I mean, why do they keep... why would he want to do this to his character?
I don't know.
All right. Let's stop trying to figure out. We're not going to get those answers. No. But maybe we will find answers to what's wrong with comics and how to make them right. And John Flood, number one, by Justin Jordan and Jogi Colho.
Hey!
See.
Hey.
Oh, hey, Colho.
This was okay.
I dug it. So this is basically the story of a guy. He never sleeps. And so because he never sleeps, he's always thinking about possibilities and able to solve problems because he's got more time in the day. And he's basically trying to solve the patterns of a series of murders. So I kind of like this character because he kind of reminded me of me. I sleep about 3 hours a night and about 42 thoughts at once.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like that too. I don't sleep very much. One of the things that I think in here is really cool is that he's got somebody around to kind of be his reality checker. Basically telling him that like the delusions that he's feeling are not real, or the things that he's seeing, because he doesn't sleep. He has these waking, he's basically in a waking dream state all the time. So he will have these hallucinations, he will have these delusions,
right.
These and all of hearing voices or seeing things. And he needs somebody to tell him what's real and what isn't, which is kind of cool.
I married mine. We celebrate 15 years on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was this I was this exact person for when I was an intern. I worked with a guy with schizophrenia, and I would come in and I would talk with him, and he would talk to me about all this crazy stuff that would happen to him on a bus, and or stuff that he would hear at night or anything like that. And he'd be like, "Do you think that was real? Do you think that really happened?" And I'd be like, "Well, you know, I don't know if it did or not, but you know, it could have been, but you might want to try to ask yourself if you're getting upset about this stuff, if it happens or not, or if it's, you know, you don't know really what to say to some of these people because you're not there with them." But it's kind of cool that they've transferred that into this detective who is kind of, he's basically schizophrenic, but he's no more twisted than Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
So he's got his Watsons that he's recruiting to kind of help him on these cases, because that grounds him and it allows him to kind of solve these cases, which is cool. I'm not sure if I understood what happened at the very end of this book. Can you explain that to me?
I gotta go back and look. I don't want to be erroneous with my analysis.
Well, there's a mystery. They recruit a new guy to be on the team of reality checkers for John Flood. There's a guy that comes in and he kills an entire household, and he sits down with them and grabs a beer and he eats with them. So he's going to be like the bad guy in the series.
All right.
And then the guy comes in and he hired John Flood to check on his wife to see if she was messing around on him. But then John Flood kind of turned the tables on this guy and told his wife where all his money is stashed. And so his wife ripped him off. And so he's about to kill John Flood. But then the guy runs off. Now, after that, that's where everything gets hazy for me. When he gets this big map in his swimming pool, what's going on there?
He's following the patterns of serial killers, and he's been able to plot out. When you're thinking of a problem, you can think of the conclusion sometimes, and you don't know how you got to that conclusion. And so what he's done is he's figured out all the conclusions. He's figured out the endpoints, or he's figured out, you know, step 10 in the 15-step process and step 7 in the 12-step process. What he needs is the arms and legs and sanity checks to fill in the other holes. We explain the gaps to how you got to that end. Is it like a precognition? A little bit. You know, it's kind of like you would say of Kasparov, or, you know, whatever the fuck that computer was that beat Bobby Fischer. I don't think that happened. I think it made up history. But you know what I mean? You know, the chess greats. They're thinking out all those moves before the moves are even played. So that's what's cool about this guy, is you're going to kind of know part of what happened here. And that's the first thing you see. So the first one he's talking about is, here's this guy. He's gone and he's killed here and here. And here's where I think he is. And the fuckbag actually is so arrogant, he's actually filming it, parts of it.
Yeah. Okay. So all those dots on there are not one killer. These are many serial killers.
I think.
Plotted out. Okay. All right. I think
I could be wrong.
Okay.
Because it is a little, if we're both wrong, then I think that's a fail there. We didn't, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I like the idea, and I think the character is a winner. I think some of the art is, it seems like a little bit almost too detailed in some occasions. I wish the artist would pull back a little bit on some of these just painter dots, and like almost like spray paint dots that you see in the painter program, you know, that sort of stuff. It just feels like there's one scene where they're in this diner, and they're looking out of the window. The window behind them has like a multitude, like just so many stars that it looks like it's almost snowing outside. Like all the sky scenes has that, and it just feels like, I don't know, that that it just busies up the panel a little bit that I don't think it needs to be that busy.
Unless there's something that's indicative of the story, wouldn't you want to? You know, what's the thing that got James Cameron, his dick tripped up with Titanic, was Neil Tyson DeGrasse watched a movie and said, you have the wrong constellations for where the Atlantic sank and for what year it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. Why would you add that? Because, I mean, what are they, in Los Angeles?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and it would almost make sense if this were told by the perspective of John Flood, because he does have, he might see the Starry Night sort of look like of places, because that's the way he sees the world. But these were the two sane people talking in the bar, so there's no reason for an insane background.
Now, all right, the one reason I'm asking where the hell was this, I don't think it's Los Angeles, I think I just pulled that out of my ass.
I think it is LA.
Why?
I don't know. It just feels very L.A. to me.
But then they go to the cabin in the woods where we see the serial killer for the first... Actually, you know what, Buck? I think it is one serial killer that John Flood is plotting out, because we met him earlier in the book, too, when he killed the family out in the woods. Now, yeah. The reason I will say you will have a skewed perception of the stars is because that where Justin Jordan lives, in the ass end of Pennsylvania where I grew up, where I went to college... you see more stars. You're away from the lights. You're up in a higher altitude. The air is clear. There's a million factors that give you a starrier sky. But I will say, if you get down into the city and you're at street level like that, that does get rid of a few of them. So the diner can kind of stay. But when he went out into the woods in the next scene, then you can have that.
Sure. But, I mean, it looks like it's snowing in some of these diner scenes, which is, that's, I'm just saying.
That was too much. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I really think that these scenes, these panels are a little busier than they should be. So I think that's just one critique of the artist. I think that there might be a little bit of the proportions that are a little weird on this guy that they're approaching in the diner. He's got a really tight suit that almost looks like it's... almost looks like he's wearing like a too tight a suit, and he's like this giant muscle bound guy, and I don't know, he just doesn't look like a normal guy.
It feels almost like they're going for quasi Luther Strode proportions.
Almost, yeah, it looks like it. So, but other than those two like tiny little things, I do think that this is an interesting book and a great character. It's like a really imaginative character to kind of pick.
All right, so we'll have to fill in the blanks when we get to. Well, let's read issue two, and we'll see if we can figure out a little bit more if it's just our stupidity or they need to give us, you know, more clues. Actually, I had to be inside.
Yeah.
Midnighter 3 by Steve Orlando and Acco.
What?
A-C-O.
Acco.
Is that a person or a group of people?
Steve Orlando is a person.
I know Steve Orlando is a person. Acco.
I don't know. Acco was probably like a team of people.
Taco did Putting on the Ritz in the 80s.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
maybe this is Taco, and he retired the T.
And he became an artist.
Could be.
For Midnighter 3.
Yep.
What'd you think of this?
I love this series.
And you love it because?
It's just really... inventive. Now, I read 2 and 3 today. Issue 2 did not have Acco as the artist. It had another person as the artist. And it wasn't as dynamic, but still it was written well. But I just think it's really cool. I think the scenes with Apollo and Midnighter in this issue were the most powerful ones for me. I just think that whole relationship between the two of them and how they broke things off and the reasoning why and everything like that. That seems like really, I think it's a universal concept. I think it's not like these are gay characters, but they're talking about basically they've been in one relationship. And this was like the end of that relationship, saying that like, you know, I can't just have one relationship in the world and then think that I have like experienced what I need to experience in order to do this. And so it's like that seems to me like a really realistic and really down to earth way of handling the breakup of these two characters. And it's it's a pretty powerful one. It's a really, like, realistic one. And this is what I'm talking about. It's like good stories. It doesn't mean if there's if it's a gay person or a white person or a black person or whatever it is, if it's written well and it latches on to, like, those universal feelings, I think that it can be really good. I think that, I don't know. What did you think?
I just think if you're in love with love, then you'll be okay with inserting the story. Yeah, it doesn't matter, gay, straight, whatever. And yes, it does need to be done well, and it needs to be integral to the character. And I think that's the best thing that Orlando has been doing with this, is that he has made sort of love to be Midnighter's calling. You know, it's love of doing right, love of helping this child, as he does in this one, that's being hooked into the JD child machine-o-matic. he is trying to do the right thing, and I think this is a better purpose. This is the best purpose they have had for these characters since they were absorbed from Stormwatch into the New 52. Yeah. I mean, they shit the bed with them on the new Stormwatch. It was just so fucking terrible, and even Starlin couldn't save it.
It feels like Steve Orlando, every now and then he's getting into this really, like, kind of technobabble, gobbledygook stuff. But then he has these little moments of just, like, character that kind of save it. Because it could be just, like, really out there concepts. Like, there's a scene in here. Let me try to find it. He's talking with someone about shit. I'm looking for it. You say something, I'll look.
I'll edit it out. I like the techno babble shit, and that's one of the things I missed from Stormwatch was they didn't explore any of it in the new book because they didn't want them traveling around to a bunch of universes. So they made them kind of parked in the middle of space with no fucking purpose, doing nothing, when you've got the most baller characters who are supposed to have, you know, the greatest amount of gravitas and power within DC Universe, just, you know, circle-jerking themselves up in space, doing absolutely nothing. The only cool thing they did was they tied Stormwatch back to Demon Knight. So they tried to create, like, this sort of 2,000-year, 4,000-year, whatever it is, history of Stormwatch. Started with the Demon Knights and carried all the way through. And they did nothing, though, with, you know, Midnighter, Apollo, any of those relationships. Angie, the machine with John Hawksmore, the guy who reads cities, Jenny Quantum. They didn't do anything with any of those characters. So.
I know nothing about any of those characters at all that you're talking about.
You so miss some good fucking comic booking.
Yeah, well.
The Authority, Stormwatch and the Authority, really, really, really good.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's fantastic, but I just wasn't interested in it. But this is, the art really highlights his power very well. I don't know exactly what it is, but it seems like he just finds the little details and he's able to kind of, like,
he can play out every single possibility, as we were saying before with, you know, in the John Flood book where you play out all the chess moves. He does that before, as soon as he enters a room, his brain is so fast and he's so conditioned for fighting that he can basically figure out every possibility to every situation as soon as anything happens.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I really liked, as much as I like all of the powered stuff, I find myself just going back to these, like, little interactions that he has with people. He's just got this. Steve Orlando just has this great handling of his character, as well as, like, how he interacts with other people. I like this, like, kind of bigoted guy. He's not really bigoted, but he's got, like, he doesn't really have a problem with him being gay. It just doesn't seem like he understands it. But he's playing pool with him. And in the first issue, he was, like, going back and forth with him. It's kind of like they argue back and forth in this bar that they go to. In the second issue, they're playing pool together, and the guy's like, and he's telling him about his relationship problems. The guy goes, well, yeah, you should come out with me and see the way I pick up women, and maybe you can apply that to you picking up men. And I just thought that was just, like, a great interaction between, like, a heterosexual guy and a gay guy, like, saying that, like, you know, we could help each other out just by you trying to, and it was the guy's like totally an idiot, but still it was just kind of like a fun interaction.
It's endearing, and yeah. You know, when it's meant in that earnest good nature, yes, he's utterly wrong. It's not the same.
But he's willing to go and help him out, and it's like it. I just kind of like that those little aspects, and so I hope that guy stays around, and he just seems like he's like a doof. But still, he's just like kind of seeing those two interact like that. It's really kind of like nice to see. It's kind of fun.
It's nice to see from Midnighter, too. Because, again, if you've got a history with this character, you've really only seen him in the shit. So seeing him is like... I still remember the last real issue, what is it, Midnighter and Apollo, when they were together. Midnighter went off looking for ladyboys in Taiwan.
Yeah.
We read that one, remember?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
He's
doing better now. Much better.
Yes, it's much better. I mean, this is a very sexual book, and there might be some things that make some people uncomfortable along the way. But everything is hinted at. It's nothing like that you wouldn't see with a guy and a girl doing. It's like they step into a... They're sitting there and they're like hugging each other in a bathroom, and then they step into the shower, and basically that's it. It's like gratuitous, and it's like the same thing that you see that same stuff with a guy and a girl. So it's nothing that's like makes it more than just PG-13, basically.
Yeah, that's all it is. I think that's what they've done with DCU. Once again, I think they've made the mistake of not labeling these goddamn books. They keep partitioning these books out by demographic and age, and they never create a subcategory of them. They never label them. You know, the New 52 came out, but remember we had the Dark books, we had the Justice League books. You could categorize them and parse them, but they never put that shit on the cover.
Yeah.
So like Martian Manhunter, Midnighter, you know, these books are definitively for one audience type.
Yeah.
And they don't denote that. I think that's silly.
Yeah. In one way, it stops them from, that stops other people from trying it. But in the other way, it's like, do you want like the kid who reads like Batmite and giggles at it, at the stupid humor to that, to see Midnighter like punch his own ears out and chop off people's heads and like kill people and do shit like that? It's like there's got to be a difference between the two.
No, I don't give a fuck about that. I think we shelter kids too long in this society. We've got the longest fucking incubation period of any mammal, and it's showing. We're going to lose dominance on this planet soon. What I care about is it destroys the fucking pattern and cadence you set for comics. The same mindset that is sitting there giggling and eating up Batmite, if they do get it, I don't care, they're going to be corrupted. They're going to be afraid and turned away from comic books, and thus no more comic books.
I'm just saying, like, the four-year-old who is going and wanting to see something goofy.
Yeah.
It's like that they want Tiny Titans and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They'll be comfortable with Batmite and Bizarro.
Right.
Not Section 8. But it's like that's not going to be the same demographic you're going for with Midnighter, which is just a more sophisticated level of storytelling. It's more sophisticated art, more sophisticated themes, and it's not going to... It's just not going to hit them on that level. People aren't going to... But I do think that... this would be a comic book that, as a kid, not knowing a lot about sex or anything like that, and just like reading it for the blood and the gore and all the cool looking pictures and everything like that, I'll bet you like at like 10 or 11 years old, I would have read this book and I would not even have noticed the gay people in the book or the gay undertones to it or anything like that. I guess I'm just a naive kid, I guess.
There was not an undertone. They were spooning each other in the bathroom. It's not an undertone? What the fuck are you saying?
Yeah, but I think I would have like turned to that page and it said, a lot of talking. I'll just turn to the next page where Midnighter is just beating up a bunch of multiplexes.
No, I got sex curious real young. So, no, I would have gone there and go, oh, wow. So that's what that looks like. I heard about it on the news.
I was just a sheltered, or I was just a naive kid, though, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I was filthy from a young age. You know, it's not filthy from a young age, or maybe it is, actually. It is filthy from a young age. This Damned Band by Paul Cornell and Tony Parker. And this is what? This is Boom?
No, this is Dark Horse, I think. Is this Dark Horse? Let me check.
We'll redo that.
Dark Horse.
All right, let's do this again. But you know what wasn't filthy? Or actually, it was extremely dirty. This damn band by Paul Cornell, Tony Parker from Dark Horse. that they're both Anglo names.
Oi.
This damn band takes place actually the year I was born, 1974.
It was 1974? Oh. I was born in 72.
Yes. That's not when this book takes place, though.
No, I was 2 years old.
Were you, when you're 2 years old, hanging out with a band like this damn band, doing lots of drugs, filming what looks like the prequel to Spinal Tap?
No, that was usually, I think I was like five when I was allowed to go on those.
That's cool.
Yeah. But this, I love this book.
Really?
Yeah. What's wrong with this book?
Wow, we diverged tonight.
Oh.
It's another comic book about a band. There's a huge, yeah. big comic book about... there's a huge thing going on right now. Musicians in comic books. Comics about musicians. I don't find musicians that exciting.
Well, it's hard because you can't really hear a comic book.
Right.
That's the tough part.
And they're not really... I don't know. There's such a pastiche of every 70s band. They're a little bit Led Zeppelin. They're a little bit Beatles.
A little bit The Who.
A little bit The Who. You know, they're just this amalgamed pastiche of my parents' band, my parents' artists. I mean, I love their music, too. Don't get me wrong, but let's be honest. Why is that interesting as a comic book?
I don't know. I like the concept of what's going on here. We do spend a very long time getting to know these guys, who they are, how the band functions, who does what in the band, and like and everything until we get to the plot. So this issue, pacing wise, as far as like what this is about. Is or where the conflict is, that's a little problematic, I think.
Okay. That could be what I mean, that could be why I'm just so I don't care.
Yeah. But I liked the characters, I liked the band, and I really liked the artwork. Tony Parker? Well, I don't know where we've seen Tony Parker before, or maybe his name is just sounding like someone else. But I really just like the look of all the different characters and just the really like flashy band poses they get into and like all that stuff. I think where this thing also fails a little bit is that the trippy world that when they do take the magic mushrooms at the end and they kind of go to this other transcendental place and they're all tripping balls and they're still playing their concert and they don't know what they sound like or what it's going on. Mm. I think that could have been a little bit more creative. It went cartoony. It could have been much more psychedelic and looking like something out of either a nightmare or just like a fever dream or something that's something we haven't seen before. But instead they go the route of like Anchorman where it's all cartoons, like, and they go on a rainbow bridge and they ride unicorns and stuff like that. You know, there's not even unicorns, but they go into like a cartoon. I guess it's supposed to be maybe reminiscent of like Yellow Submarine or something, or Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, whatever the cartoon version of Beatles was.
Yellow Submarine.
Yeah, it's like they. They tried to do that sort of thing, but even less stylized. It was just like a cartoonish version of everything.
Well, and that's what all these characters feel like, are cartoonish versions of characters that were really baller in the 70s who end up selling their soul to the devil.
Yeah, and then they sell their soul to the devil. It's obvious that there's trouble in the band. There's just kind of like everyone's kind of feels like they're out for themselves. None of them really seem to get along with each other. They're just kind of like there for the ride. And it feels like they're about to hit the end anyway. So I don't know. It just, for some reason, it hit me. I thought that this was a really cool book.
Okay.
I don't know. What didn't you like about it? You just did.
Unoriginal, unfunny, with a plot that I just didn't. It didn't surprise me. It's in the fucking title of the book.
Yeah. What's in the title? This Damn Band?
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
You kind of know what's going to happen.
Mother Father is the name of the band.
Are you trying to make me like it?
Yes.
Okay.
I like the guy.
Try again. Say something else.
A big furry vest. The lead singer's got a big furry vest.
At like Manfred Mann used to wear.
Yes. And the guy in the suit, he's getting a blowjob in the back room. He's like, can't I just have sex in peace? And like they're trying to talk to him.
If I got a blowjob when I bought the comic book, I might like him more.
You know what I think this book needs is an accompanying CD.
What about an accompanying blowjob? Just a certificate?
I don't know if that is something that this book could provide.
It depends on the state. A CD would be good. Yes, that would help. But you know what, Buck? There's not a ton of music in this because, as I said, they're filming This Is Spinal Tap through most of it. It's a documentary they're filming for the beginning part.
It's like a found footage. It's like a found footage comic book.
And that's the other thing. It's like, you know, that is a very heavy-handed way to do exposition. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's a very dialed-in way to do exposition.
They've done it before. They did it. Remember that comic book in the early 2000s, The Order?
Yeah.
They did it in that a lot. They had like the interview sort of thing.
And I don't have a problem with that. Again, as long as it's clever, as long as it's interesting, you've got to have something to carry it. I didn't find the jokes to be that funny. A lot of marginal for me that just added up to a lot of I don't care.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I liked it.
Good.
People who like maybe I don't know. It just felt it felt like kind of like a love letter to that era with that type of music and that type of bands and just like the everything was psychedelic and transcendental and everybody rock and roll was like a transcendental experience. It's not like the produced kind of shit that you see that's out today. It's just more of a fun tone to it.
It's this. Wait a minute. I'm just trying to think of like This Is Spinal Tap. I'm thinking like there's because I thought it was really clever. Okay, I thought for a second one character. I wanted to give you something that I like tonight. One character where he's like he's not really that way. He's not the persona that he is on stage, right? And he's got to remember. Oh, I got a stage character because I'm really a nice guy and everything. That happened in This Is Spinal Tap. This is Spinal Tap where they meet the devil.
Yes, at the end, the devil shows up and with a bargain for them, basically. We don't know what it is yet completely because it ends with a splash page of him standing there. He's got six faces.
Which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Tony Parker did a great job. The art was exquisite. It was a beautiful-looking book.
Yeah. And Paul Cornell has been around for ages. He's been writing a lot of... He wrote a lot of Marvel stuff. I don't know if he wrote DC stuff, but he wrote a lot of, like, X-Men stuff. And
I've liked a lot of Paul's stuff. Just... Not this time for me. Sorry.
Okay. All right.
You know what I did like?
What? A Blumpkin?
I did like a Blumpkin from Lois Lane. In my parents' house. But what I did like was Darth Vader, like more than that, was Darth Vader number 8 by Kieran Gillen and Salvador La Roca. We would be wise to let JD come back and run this podcast. These are the voyages of... Oh, that was different.
No, that doesn't work.
All right. So I said when the first one of these came out, it was utterly unnecessary. I still believe it's utterly unnecessary.
Oh, stop.
But it was fun. I liked reading all five of these. I thought they were very cool. I had a good time with them. I would not keep going with them because I don't need them to add to the story, but I thought it was good.
There is no pleasing you.
Now, you know what the problem is? I don't want Darth Vader to be humanized.
He's not really... Well, he is, I guess they're humanizing, but they already humanized him by giving him the whole Anakin backstory.
I get it. Okay, so this is like... But this is like, okay, so you've got a chick where half of her face is scraped off, right? Okay? She's a lovely girl, great personality, everything else. If you get her at the right angles and right lighting, you won't throw up in your mouth when you look at her. Mm-hmm. If you put Bactine on that girl's face... Do you still want to throw up less?
No, but she'll probably scream. Because that back team, that's smarts.
That, to me, has been the humanization of Darth Vader. Meaning, I think Kieran Gillen, I think Salvador Larraca have done a wonderful thing here in trying to rectify the abortion that Lucas wrought upon this universe with giving Darth Vader a backstory and making him the fucking protagonist of these 9 movies.
Well, yeah, this whole thing, I see it as like them doing Kieran Gillen giving a really good job at giving, for the bulk of this book, Darth Vader's not even in it, in this issue specifically. It's the bounty hunters, it's this new girl who has been like the co-star in this series since the beginning, Aphra. Dr. Aphra, and I think she's really cool. I think she's a really cool character, and the way she kind of skirts around is like saying she's ready to die at any moment. She knows that Vader can kill her at any second, but she still hangs around. She's still trying to make things right. She's still trying to please him, and that's kind of exactly what Darth Vader was trying to do with the Emperor, and trying to be his number one pupil. And there's like a big spoonful of poop snacks that Darth Vader got a couple issues ago.
How?
Because Darth Vader found out that there's another guy named... what's his name?
Robot Jedi Frankenstein.
No, his name is something four. So now he's 5. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm talking the guy that makes Jedis.
Cylon 5. Or no, is it Cylon?
Cylon's from Battlestar Galactica.
Something like that. He's like a guy, he looks a little bit like Cable. He's got like one mechanical eye. He's like kind of half human, half machine. And he's been kind of in contention to be the Emperor's number 2 for a long time, too. And he's been developing these cyborg-like kind of people who are kind of like false Jedis. It's like they have like lightsabers and they have stuff like that, but it pisses Vader off that they even exist because they aren't real Jedis.
They're using cybernetics to do amazing things, where he uses the midichlorians of the Force. So
yes,
he believes because he's a torso and he uses run by machines, because the rest of them is machines, and they use midichlorians, so he's good, as opposed to these guys, who actually have more biomatter than he does, but
yes,
they're the abominations, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that it's because he has, like, the natural link to the Force, that's why he thinks. And the Emperor, I think it's in this issue, points out that he said, you're more machine than man anyway, and kind of slaps him in the face with that. So it's really nice to see... I think it's nice to see Darth Vader. He's not really a good guy. He's doing horrible things. He's killing people. He's doing all this stuff. It's not like he's saving a puppy or anything like that. He's just basically using people to become the... It's now his driving force is to finding Luke Skywalker. And he wants to do that before anyone else does because he knows he has this link to him. And he just realized in like 2 issues ago that he has a son. And he makes the connection between the kid who killed the Death Star as his own son. And so that was just kind of, that was really, it was a really cool scene. And we talked about it last week because the same scene happened in last week's issue
Star
where
Wars, yeah.
Cracks the window and almost like sends himself shooting out into space, but he doesn't do that. But in this issue, Samuel L. Jackson shows up.
Mace Windu?
No, it's not Mace Windu. It's a guy that looks like, he looks like he would be Samuel L. Jackson. If like,
oh, yeah.
You know, that guy, he's like a private investigator, but he's an Imperial Guard. And so obviously the Emperor has sent him to his side because he doesn't trust Darth Vader and what Vader is doing. And already this guy has pieced together that Darth Vader is behind a lot of the shenanigans that's been happening to the Empire.
He's internal affairs, essentially.
Yeah. And I think this is just a really smart way of doing it right now. It's a smart way of incorporating layers of evil. And there's the bounty hunters, there's the Darth Vader level of evil, and then there's the Emperor level of evil. And it's a political play, but there's action, and it's not the boring trade talks
that we got
in the Star Trek or the Star Wars movies, the original or the prequels. But it's still political intrigue, and it's fun, and it's much more sophisticated stuff than I've seen from Kieran Gillen before, and I really like what I'm seeing.
It is an amazing comic book. It is a well-done story. I think the first time Asphat or Aflock or whatever the fuck her name is, Aphra,
yes.
Yeah, okay. Darth Vader, I know the first time Aphra sasses him, he would just force choke her and shove her out an airlock and say, "Get me a new archaeologist."
He could, but I don't think that there's anyone like her around, and I think that he senses that in her. I think that there's a part of him that reminds him of her, there's a part of her that reminds him of her as a young kid, because she like gathers these droids. She's this kind of like rebellious kind of like racer, and like she's kind of like a cross between Han Solo and Luke Skywalker a little bit.
Yep.
But she's fun. She's likable.
Sure. If you want to see Darth Vader getting sassed, she's likable.
Well, she knows how much to sass and how much not to. I also like, there's a tiny little interaction in here between Bossk and IG-88 that I really like.
Which one?
Bossk says something like, he says, "Hard to believe Imperials use droids to work like this. Obsolete." And IG-88 goes, interjection, offensive. And he goes, "You're an IG, it's not the same."
Yeah, so that was
like,
good.
It's like because he's this type of robot, which is an IG robot, and I don't know exactly what that means, but because of that, he's not the same as like regular droids. And I just felt that, I thought that was just like a weird little interaction. It gave them it gave IG-88 a lot of character that, the character has never really had before.
Yeah, the IG-88s are still on dial-up.
Is that what it is?
That is. It's a much slower process.
Either they're more evolved robots or they're less evolved robots. One of the two, they're not the same as droids. So it makes me curious as to, what is different about IG-88 that makes him different in Bossk's kind of world?
Whenever they turn him on, he goes, "You've got mail."
And I wonder if Bossk talks about Wookiees, and I think I do remember reading somewhere that the Bossk creatures, the guys that are Bossk, their natural enemies are Wookiees, or they hunt Wookiees a lot and everything. So it's kind of cool that they're delving into that kind of history.
I love all that stuff. Again, I like everything that's going on in this book. I don't like this book.
Stop it.
I don't like the concept of this book. I'm sorry.
Well, why don't you think of it as basically the sister book to the Star Wars book? It's like Star Wars is going to follow Luke, Han, Leia, and everything, and then this will follow Darth Vader, and they will meet. They will meet occasionally, because we did see this. We saw one scene in the Star Wars version that we saw later on in the Darth Vader one.
Talking the boner, the window boner crack.
Yeah, but it's cool that they did the same scene and they're that coordinated.
Wonderful continuity.
this is the kind of coordination I would like to see in regular comics. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a continuity like that.
No.
You're telling a story. It makes you feel like you're part of a big epic story. Now, I wish Marvel would realize that with the rest of their overblown, overwrought line that they have.
No.
Why couldn't it be? Wouldn't it be cool if there was a scene with Reed and Tony Stark talking, and you saw it from two different angles? There's the one with Boba Fett. There's like that one angle with Boba Fett having the fight and then coming to Darth Vader,
and
you see it from Boba Fett's perspective.
Uh-huh.
Then in Darth Vader, we see it from Darth Vader's perspective as he has the flashbacks to Padme, as he flashbacks to the Emperor, as he tells him that Padme didn't make it, and all of this stuff. So you get layers of this story from both angles at different times as you're reading it, and it just really makes for a much more fluid and fulfilling story. You could do the same thing with an interaction between Reed and Tony Stark, or Reed and Ben Grimm and Captain America, or something like that. It would just be really, it would just add another layer of cool. And it's just too bad that Marvel's too big to do that sort of thing, because I think that it's really successful and they've done it in the past in this way before.
Yes. No, I mean, I agree. It's a fantasy of what we want. We had it as kids. You see the scene this way, and then you see it from the 20-degree angle, the other person's thoughts. Yeah. I will defy you, though. I'm sorry. With the Star Wars, Darth Vader does not get sassed in the fucking main Star Wars title. As soon as you have to make him a protagonist, you have to give him a resonance with the audience. You've got to give him something that makes him relatable to us and makes him less fucking evil in the process. I don't think Star Wars is broad and deep enough that, these three-dimensional complexities to Vader, I believe they have neutered the character the more they've talked. The more I've talked about Vader, the more I feel Vader's been neutered.
Well, I see him at, he wasn't neutered, but he came to a resolution at the end of Jedi that he was basically a good character, misguided, but good. You can argue that he was never a purely evil character. He was just motivated along the way as to what information he had. I mean, he was told that Padme was dead. What if he found out that he did have two kids? Would he have turned out to be Darth Vader? I don't know. You never know. You don't know that. But
it's not a question I ever wanted answered.
Well, what's wrong with having a little complexity to these characters other than just black and white?
Here's the thing. All you needed from me was to know that Darth Vader said once to Luke Skywalker, "I am your father." And that love of a father for a son, and to try and save a son, overrode the fucking... Because, again, prequels, we had a whole idea of what Darth Vader was and what was going on inside fucking Darth Vader. His fucking wiring fused back together from robot to normal. He did one last act of sacrifice to help his son. Then he died. That's all I needed from Darth fucking Vader.
But he's a good character. Why couldn't we? You can add more to it. That's basically all they're doing right now. They're filling in the gap in between there, because we never saw the scene where Darth Vader found out Luke was the guy who killed
him. Okay, all right. And my problem is, in the original three books, before you take the shit-fuck three prequels, okay, that this is the... Again, let's go back to my analogy. The chick who lost half the skin on her face, you want to throw up in your mouth when you look at her. This is the Bactine on that, instead of not skinning off the chick's face to fucking begin with. All I ever needed to know about Darth Vader, I knew from those three movies, and the prequels destroyed just the purity and simplicity of the good, evil, and father-son, and then final act of redemption before I die relationship. That's what I'm saying. I don't need this, and I don't want to see this.
I know, but
and I don't see it in the Star Wars comic book, okay? Over in main Star Wars, he's the baddest-ass motherfucker, and just a simple fact that Darth Vader could have always known that Luke and Leia were his twins, okay? And he still just decided, hey, gotta do what I could do to put fucking bread on the table and keep the galaxy safe. Well, I gotta go off and help the Empire.
that could be another interesting aspect of the character then. Like, whatever he knows, that could be just an interesting fold, like, wrinkle in the character. All I'm saying is I think you're letting the anger towards the prequels cloud the way you're looking at this book.
Absolutely.
Well, don't do that.
No, fuck it, Bug. I'm going to say it's a good fucking book in execution. It's well done for me. Yes. Hey, everybody out there in podcasting land, make your own opinions. You know what? Tell us your opinion. Share this fucking podcast with your friends. Get their opinions. Everybody gang up on me. You're not going to fucking change my mind about how I feel about what should be in this universe. I didn't need the prequels, and I don't need the Bactine on the skin off girl's face. Just don't skin off the girl's face. Fine. And that's how I feel about Darth Vader number 8. There's your poll quote.
Fine.
So she doesn't throw up. Why do you?
My poll quote is, this book fills my pants with carbonite.
Wow. And before it happens, you lick your dick and go, I love you.
Yes.
And your book goes, I know.
I love this book.
That was a scene from Empire.
What? Oh, yeah, I know it is.
And the whole conversation just had with you and your penis, your carbonite penis.
Yep.
All right. Do you love Darth Vader as much as Bug does? Do you feel that, you know what, Bug, I won't even say it. Don't even agree with me, people. Just tell Bug that he's right. Write in and tell Bug how fucking right he is about Darth Vader.
I am right.
I'm fine. I don't need validation on this. I want you to take this, Bug. I hope everybody loves it and hates me for how I feel about it. All right.
Well, they always hate one of us.
Yeah, I know. This damn band, Midnighter, John Flood, Batmite, Dark Corridor, whatever you're reading.
Which one did you like this week? Is there any that you liked unmitigationably?
John Flood, Midnighter.
Okay.
Yeah, John Flood and Midnighter, well done. Like both stories, like the execution of both stories. Totally, totally on board.
Yeah.
Dark Corridor.
I liked all of them except for Dark Might, or Black Batmite, and Fantastic Four, and there was another book that we didn't like.
No, you were good. You liked Dark Corridor.
I thought it was decent.
Right, you did not like Batmite.
Mm-hmm.
You liked John Flood-ish. You convinced yourself you liked John Flood, I think, more than you liked John Flood.
Yeah.
Midnighter 3, we both love Midnighter 3. This damn band, you were a big fan.
Yes. Yeah. I lit my lighter and held it in the air for that book. You just lit it on fire with a lighter.
Yeah, and Darth Vader, which again, damn well done book. Damn well done book that should have never fucking existed.
I want to slice that book open and crawl inside of it for warmth, like a tauntaun.
Yeah. Okay, if you want to slice into us and crawl into us like tauntauns, write us, info@poptardsgo.com. Everybody give love letters to JD. Tell him how much we missed him. Especially,
yes.
This was just terrible. did.
Is it like, did we get like 2 hours of stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Close to it.
Yeah, we're going to really lose people. We don't have mariachi music or hot lady voices to say goodbye to all of you, so we're just going to say goodbye.
Goodbye. Buenos tardes. Farewell.
Ocho nuevo. Me llamo.